This is Meg from Ontario Linux Fest. We look forward to meeting you on Saturday, October 13th in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, for a day-long event that celebrates open source, software libre, and GNU Linux. We have top-notch presentations from key project contributors to inform and delight you. You'll meet other Linux enthusiasts just like you, and perhaps meet the key colleague you need to add to your project. You might even meet your next employer or employee by networking at Ontario Linux Fest. You'll meet our major sponsors from IBM, Novell, and Research in Motion on our exhibition floor and rub elbows with them at our reception after the event. We can't make Ontario Linux Fest happen without our sponsors, and we can't make it succeed without you. Register now at onlinux.ca or call 1-877-TUXFEST. That's 1-877-TUXFEST. We can't wait to meet you at Ontario Linux Fest.
Who's the best show here?
Ed Show! Yeah!
The Linux Night Tech Show is on. Your link to GNU Linux and the latest technology. 2 hours of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter. Free software, free speech, open technology,
and open mic.
I love it.
Now, live from the Linux Link Tech Show studios, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up and take it away.
Welcome to another exciting episode of the Linux Link Tech Show. This is episode 210. This is September 9th, yeah. September 19, 2007. Welcome, everybody.
I guess we have no Link tonight.
Link is missing in action.
He must be dead.
Hopefully he's okay. Anybody seen nice Link? Let us know.
My netlink is up.
Your what?
My network link is up.
Oh, okay.
Well, we got an exciting episode tonight.
Don't lie.
We're gonna talk about OLF. No, we're not talking about Ontario Linux Fest. That may be a good festival, but we're talking about Ohio Linux Fest, which is a week and a half away. With us tonight, we've got Greg Baumline and Drew Curtis. We're going to talk about Ohio Linux Fest. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Hello.
How's it going? Thanks for having me on. I got about three beers in right now. Is that the minimum?
No, six. Six-pack at least.
Okay, I'll get there. Hang on.
Okay. Hey, hang on. I got to go grab another couple myself.
Okay.
Speaking of, the question is what beers are you drinking, gentlemen?
I'm drinking some Stella Artois.
I'm drinking Killian's, but the wife is bringing me more beer from the store, so I don't know what we'll end up with.
I'm drinking a local brew called Kentucky Bourbon Barrel Ale. It's fantastic.
That sounds good.
I'm going down microbrew lane myself. There's a local brewery called Great Lakes, and they have a Dortmunder Gold, and I have a keg of it in my basement.
I think you got it all beat.
Only a keg?
Alan's very drinking Coors Light.
Beer.
I'm not drinking anything. I'm sorry.
Alan's not a beer drinker. He's more into...
wine coolers.
What do you drink? Scotch, Alan?
Anything hard, yeah.
Zima or Bartles and James.
Zima.
No, I don't drink during the week. I don't drink hardly at all anyways, but definitely not when I got to get up at 4:30 in the morning.
I hear you.
I'm sick of your attitude, and I don't want to hear from you anymore. I want to hear about Ohio Linux Fest.
Seriously, this is the fifth year of the Ohio Linux Fest, and it's going to be the bigger and the best one ever, right?
Yes, but no nude penguins this year.
Ah.
Why is that?
We thought it would be hard to top them, so we decided we'd call and find out if they were available, and they weren't. But so we just decided to not do them. They're actually going to be in Indiana that weekend.
That
the
must
penguins,
have been...
it turns out, are very, very popular for the zoo.
Ah, that must have been pretty hard to make all those arrangements to get them to show up last year.
It definitely was, and I mean, it took a lot of work, but we managed to get it to happen. Basically, the Columbus Zoo has an outreach program, and if you bribe them with enough money, they'll do pretty much anything as long as it doesn't hurt the animals. And so they did call us and let us know that they had a significant number of visitors to the penguin exhibit the following Sunday. So I thought, yeah, great.
Well, that's good. That is good. So what first off, let's talk about logistics here. How many people attended last year's Ohio Linux Fest?
I think somewhere around 10 o'clock it was announced that we broke the 1,500 person mark. I think the final numbers were closer to 1,600, but I don't have the specifics. We do expect to have at least that many people this year, if not more. And so, as you can imagine, logistics are sort of challenging for that.
I can see. Now, is it going to be in the same location as last year?
Yeah, the location has not changed for this year. Next year, will be a different story. We have a much larger space next year, so the Ohio Linux Fest next year will be even bigger than it is this year. But we decided, instead of expanding the space this year, that we would expand the days. So we opened up some training events that are occurring on Friday called OLFU, for OLF University, and we also opened up some training some post-conference activities on Sunday, mainly LPI testing and some other additional just wrap-up stuff, nothing really huge. But a lot of people have been calling for us to make it a multi-day conference, and we've been sort of fighting that. But we had to sort of make the call this year to expand it a little bit.
Now, why wouldn't you want to make it a multi-day event? Is this just more complicated and more work?
Yeah, I mean, as ever, Linux Fest is completely volunteer organized. It's completely run by people that just give their time, their blood, sweat, and tears to it. And the logistics of actually organizing a much longer and larger festival would require us to significantly... be more organized. And that's a challenge, especially when people are doing this in their spare time. The last couple of months leading up to Linux Fest for the sort of the core organization group becomes pretty hectic. As an example, I've been spending somewhere in the neighborhood of 3 to 4 hours a night for the past 3 to 4 weeks just working on logistics. You know, like last night we finalized the program guide and got it to the printer just before the deadline. So it's a lot of work, and we do it on pretty much a shoestring budget. We've managed to raise a fairly substantial amount of money to put on the conference, but most everything that we collect goes right back into it. You know, for example, all the money that we've collected this year, I think that when all said and done, we're probably going to be you know, have just enough to put down payment for next year, and then we're back to square one. So every year is a new challenge.
Now, I noticed looking at the schedule that you guys are up to 4 tracks now of talks at the same time. Looks like you got 3 regular talks and 1 commercial talk going on. So there's just, unless you could split yourself into 4 different people, you're just not going to see everything.
Yeah, I think that's one of the challenges. It's certainly a challenge for Joe, who's done the scheduling and all of the organization of the speakers. He has to do some real tough decisions about who to put next to each other in the talks, and a lot of it's just kind of looking into a crystal ball and making an educated guess as to who we think will be a draw, and most of the time we're wrong. So you can imagine that we go through that exercise every year. How do we give people the ability to see what they want? One of the things that's been suggested to us in the past and we started to do last year, and we're a little bit more organized, is that we'll actually be recording all of the talks. So even if you don't get the chance to see it live, per se, you will be able to pick up the recorded copy of talks. No promises, of course, because it's all volunteers, but you will be able to pick up copies of the talks afterwards on the website. So you'll be able to come in and pick them up and grab them. So if there was something that you missed and you wanted to hear, we're going to try to at least make an audio recording of that available.
Speaking of the talks, there's some really good topics this year going on. I see a couple that I'm really interested in.
That always interests me because we have such a diverse group of people. What is it that you guys are interested in? What do you see in the schedule that again, because I don't pick the talker, the speakers, but what do you see in the schedule that's particularly interesting?
The ones that jump out at me are the multimedia type stuff, like, for instance, Joe Bourne's talk about the $100 Linux Media Center. That one is definitely a must-attend one. I'm also interested in the Python talk because I'm learning how to code in Python. And then Mad Dog is always good. And what else? And even the Debian and Ubuntu packaging tutorial sounds like a good one.
Foss. I was going to say Foss and how developers pay bills seems really interesting. What Pat said. There's a lot of good ones here. I mean, I'm trying to look and say, what wouldn't I want to go see? Maybe Free Software in Africa perspective, because it's great, but I don't live in Africa. And I'm a ugly American.
That's one of the ones that jumped out at me. That guy's coming from Africa.
Yeah.
Is he
representing,
really?
Yeah, he's actually flying in from Africa to represent Fedora as part of the Fedora team.
That's cool.
So he's an ambassador for Fedora. And I'm particularly interested in what his perspective is. Because I was able at one of the other conferences, one of the Asterisk conferences I attend, there was a guy that gave a talk about using a bicycle-powered computer with Asterisk and a satellite dish to bring satellite phone service to these remote African villages, which I thought was absolutely just totally amazing. So you want to make a phone call, you got to go get your buddy to hop on a bike and, you know, pedal as fast as he can to create the power to boot the PC to make the phone call. But, I'm interested in that.
You know what? You talked me into it. Now I am interested in it. So I'd have to, you know, by a process of elimination, I would have to say, unlike Pat, I would probably skip the $100 Linux Media Center only because I know Joe Bourne is going to be coming on the show in the next couple of weeks.
And
I can get, you know, talk to him one-on-one or four-on-one. But, you know, but that's it. But all of them. Warren Woodford.
That's probably a good one, too.
I'd be interested in that.
Yeah, Mepis is a pretty incredible project, and a lot of people underestimate how powerful that platform is. But I'm very much hoping that I'm going to have the ability to stop in and see that talk myself.
And Don Paris's talk. I like Don Paris's writing.
Which is the one that he's doing?
Marketing FOSS beyond word of mouth.
Yeah. That's definitely one of those things. I think a lot of people don't understand how to market free software. One of my personal experiences has been growing up with Linux in the industry and trying to sell Linux to people in like 1994, it just really wasn't flying. Trying to actually tell people, hey, you need to buy this stuff because it's cool, really didn't work. So I kind of developed my own strategy for selling Linux, which is to sell the solution and not tell them what it was on the back end. And I'd be interested to see if Don's perspective on that is similar. Or if his experiences have been similar to that.
Yeah, even the Friday sessions with what is it, LLFU?
Yes.
They look really, I mean, it'd be a tough choice.
A lot of people a lot of people said, why don't you guys do real commercial training so that we can get our companies to pay for us to come? And we said, okay. So as part of our, I mean, Ohio Linux Fest University this year is pretty small in comparison to what we'd want to do in the future. And this year is really a dry, it's almost a dry run to see how it's going to work. The quality of the instructors and what LOPSA, the League of System Professional System Administrators, is bringing is pretty incredible stuff. I know that there's a track on there that was taken off of the main schedule that may be put back on with an actual SANS security instructor if he's available, which if you consider the cost of the classes compared to what the commercial alternatives would be at a traditional training facility, it's pennies on the dollar. But it will be very interesting to see how that works out. At this point, it's taken a lot longer than we had expected to get things solidified on it. But there is a lot of great data that is to be had on Friday if somebody's willing to fork over the dough for that. That does cost $300, not included in the regular conference. And of course, all that money goes for beer anyways. But it definitely has a good pedigree there of people. Jesse Trox, Chris St. Pierre, and Stephen Porter. Everybody there is definitely got many, many years of administration experience and has been involved with LOPSA for their training days already. So they're well accustomed to this.
I have a question for you.
Sure.
In looking over, comparing the speakers to the schedule, I'm looking here and I see Phil Robb of Hewlett Packard is going to talk about open source legal issues.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see him listed under speakers.
And a lot of that is because of the fact that we haven't gotten all of the talk descriptions in for the open source solution stage, which is why you'll see a lot of stuff that's TBA. I think Phil's I can't really speak for what he's going to talk about, but I got to imagine that SCO is going to come up there.
Because I'm really interested in listening to that.
Talk.
That one sounds awesome.
The whole concept of the open source solution stage this year is to give the vendors a forum. I mean, again, this is something new that we're trying too, and we need feedback from people to find out whether or not they believe it's worth it. But I think that the whole point of the open source solution stage is to give vendors the opportunity to give them a forum to talk about commercial applications and to give more of the vendor-specific commercial for their product. And I'll tell you, there are two talks in that I absolutely will not miss. Viata's talk at 1:15 and Zenos' talk at 3:50. Eric Dahl is the guy that started Zenos, and Zenos is a network monitoring system that's kind of like taking Cacti and Nagios and combining them together with a bunch of crack. It's a really cool project. And Viata is, both of these companies, Zenos and Viata, are both companies that have taken an open source product and they've really embraced the model of actually having enterprise back-end support. Viata sells open source routers. So you can basically take, and it's specifically for the mid-market, so you can take like a 2600 or a 3600 Cisco and replace it with a server running Viata's code. And all of their stuff is available for free. Same with Zenos. You can download it, you can use it, you can play with it. You know, if it doesn't work, you can make suggestions on what to make it work. But they really are open source projects that I think are fantastic because they move Linux into completely new areas in the data center. You know, Zenos, for example, is traditionally where you'd have HP OpenView and some of the higher end management software, and Viata, of course, is going directly after Cisco. So those are two things that I just absolutely won't miss on the solution stage. And again, everybody's different. A lot of people might go, ah, screw that. I don't want to see that. I want to go instead. I want to go looking at the open office presentation, where I want to read about I want to see Mad Dog talk about the computing off the grid. But I definitely would recommend you check them out. At least wander over there and take a look.
Yeah, you know what? I heard about Xeno somewhere, and I can't remember where I was. I listened to the guy, I think one of the developers, talk about it and about their business model. And I thought it was on Linux World podcast, but
it was on Linux Action Show, I think.
Oh, was it? You lie,
yeah, I
Pat.
I think they had a guy on from. No, I think it was the Linux Action Show. They had him on there.
You know, the other cool person that I want to see is Drew.
What's Drew doing there?
Seriously, drinking, where is Drew?
He's drinking.
Well, I'm hanging out in my backyard right now.
Not cool.
So, Drew, why are you coming to Linux Fest?
He's got nowhere else to be.
You were bothering me about it last year, and you're a lot of fun to hang out with. That's the main reason. And there's beer.
There's beer.
Speaking
of beer, I think now would be an appropriate time to talk about the FARC party and the kickoff party, which you guys from the Linux Link Tech Show are hosting.
Yes, it's going to be at Borley's, a great place. We were there last year. We had lots of fun, and we're really looking forward to getting together with everybody the night before. Well, it's not actually the conference is on Saturday, but you guys are doing classes on Friday, right?
Right.
But we're looking forward to meeting everybody on Friday night. It should be a good crowd. Barley's is a really cool place. They have some really kick-ass microbrew beer. And it's going to be a good time. I definitely, hope everybody comes in, stops in, and says hello for at least a little bit.
We have to get you guys a VIP list so you can hand out the beer ticket.
I don't have a problem with that.
And that's right across the street almost from the venue.
Convention center.
Right around the corner from the Drury Inn. You can just walk down.
That's a good thing.
Down one street and stumble down the next.
There you go.
I think talking about Barley's, Drew, you'll appreciate this. These guys take making ale seriously. I mean, they talk about beer, but we're talking about traditional cask-aged ales. They actually have something that they call Firkin Friday. And a firkin is apparently a 10-gallon measurement of beer. Well, a firkin is a cask, but it's equivalent to 10 gallons of beer. And what they do is they age this beer, and then when it's ready, they'll pop one of these 10-gallon casks, and then they gravity feed it. It's not pressurized in any way. It's naturally carbonated, but they gravity feed it through something called a beer machine, which kind of sounds cool in and of itself. But they have to get rid of it all within 48 hours because if it's not, obviously it's not pressurized, so it goes bad. So they have a couple of spare firkins. I'm trying to see if they could put on their barley wine, which is out of this world.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Barley wine is pretty evil.
Yes.
We have a small brewery over here called Wirebacker, and they have a barley wine called Blithering Idiot, and that stuff is pretty potent.
Blithering Idiot. That's about how I get after a couple of them.
Yeah, that's really high alcohol content, that stuff. It's, what, like 12-13%, something like that?
Yep. And they serve it in a snifter. So I don't know if they're going to have some of that, but I'm hoping that they will. Also, hey, something else that's kind of cool. We're going to have to remember this for next year. They have a downstairs. Are you guys aware of that?
Yeah, I remember you mentioned it in the email.
I think that I saw people going down there last year.
It's like and some girl named Stephanie is having her rehearsal dinner for her wedding.
And we're going to join her
that night. I got to imagine that as the evening wears on and as both groups tend to get more and more intoxicated, there will be more and more intermingling of crowds.
We'll have to go down there and say hi at some point.
Yeah. I kept calling Barley's and saying, is she called it off yet? Is she called it off yet? And we were even thinking maybe we can find somebody to go in there and break it up, because downstairs they have an awesome dungeon. I mean, it's like nothing you've ever seen. You go down there and it's all dark and there's this huge bar, and they have these big stone sort of dungeon areas with grates across the, so you could lock your friends in there for a little bit, and they can put tables in there. Oh my, it's awesome. And they've got this really whack out tree that's just growing out of the middle of the rock, and they just decorate it with Christmas lights. It has like one leaf on it. It's like the Charlie Brown Christmas tree. I think Stephanie's a very special girl, let me tell you that.
Apparently, yeah. Like the dungeons.
Right. I thought to myself, you know, if Columbus had an S&M club, this would probably be what it looked like. So next year, guys, we'll have it. I keep telling them, I'm like, put it on the list. I thought it'll be like October.
Maybe 10th, I don't want to go down there. That sounds dangerous.
You do. You know why you want to go down there? Because right in the middle of that, they have all of their brewing stuff.
Huh.
So it smells like malt. It's like awesome. It smells like it smells like a beer shop.
Oh.
So it's cool. You can watch them brewing and doing all sorts of stuff.
Take it right from the tap, right there, huh? Right from the barrel.
If you want. Yeah. But so Barley's is gonna be fun. And I think I've convinced the bar to put out in their advertising, Drew, you'll like this. I think they're gonna change it to Farkin Friday.
That sounds good.
When we talked to the guy, we said, you know, hey, we want to have a FARC party here. And he's like, I've been wanting to do nothing but erase everything up there and put FARC.com on that board for a while, but nobody's given me a reason to do it yet. And I said, well, your prayers have been answered.
That's the way to go. We find the best places to do that is places that have actually heard of FARC before, because that way when people kind of wander in off the streets asking about the FARC party, people don't just look at them funny and go, what? What are you talking about? Never heard of that.
So, Drew, what can we expect from a FARC party?
Well, it's interesting. For people listening that have never been to a FARC party or necessarily gone to bars that much, too, it stems out of a practice I got into when I was living in England, when I was in college. I used to, in England, people, I guess they don't like being at home. And after they eat dinner, they go out to the pub 5, 6, 7 nights a week. And while that seems excessive to Americans, when you're actually there, it's kind of an extension of your own living room. And the idea basically is that when I was in England, you would go there, you go to the regular pub, you'd have a bunch of locals you'd hang out with, and there are people that if you ever met them outside the pub, you'd be like, whoa, oh, this is strange. But when you were actually in the pub, it was a really good time. You could hang out, you could talk, you had conversation. And the idea was is that you would have a number of people from all different backgrounds and political beliefs and religious beliefs and whatnot, just hanging out, having a good time, agreeing to disagree, and drinking beer. And it's a great time.
Excellent.
You know,
I think the drinking beer part's really good, too.
Before we go any further, regarding FARC, for our listeners who are not familiar with FARC, and that's FARK.com, describe FARC for them, what it is.
Sure. Actually, I wrote a book recently, and the publicist for the company came up with the best one-line description that I think I've heard yet. It's, what if the Daily Show ran the Drudge Report?
There you go.
And that's it. It's listening to the best stuff in the news on a given day, but it's slanted towards the funny rather than the conservative.
I think FARC is single-handedly one of the sites that's made me pee my pants on repeated occasions. Because of laughing so hard. The sarcasm
is
just awesome.
Yeah, we have an advantage. We're kind of a social news site, but kind of not in the sense that we're edited social news. Like, the way I describe it is, like, you know, if Dig is a social democracy, then we're a benevolent dictatorship. Basically taking all the stuff that people send in, usually one-liners, you know, quips that people are coming up with and funny slants that they've got on the news, and then kind of distilling those out and pulling out the best, the funniest stuff, the stuff that just makes you fall on the floor laughing, and put those up as the day's news.
So, are you, Drew, I mean, last time, not to take it off topic, but the last time that we had talked, you were expounding on your your responses to legal cease and desist orders from copyright infringement stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Are you still being served with that stuff on a regular basis?
Yeah, pretty much. We have regular Photoshop contests on FARC where people digitally manipulate photos. And, I don't know how often. I'd say about once or twice a week or so we'll get an email from somebody who's had their work digitally altered. And, I don't know, I guess artists or photographers don't know, have a lot of legal background and don't understand that when you create a derivative work out of something, especially when it's not for profit, there's absolutely no protection under the law. And by that, that sounds sinister, but the upshot of it is that if your parody is protected, you can go ahead and parody anything you want to. And the example I use is sometimes you have to be careful. For example, Weird Al, we all know who Weird Al is, did a parody of Beat It, Michael Jackson's Beat It in the mid-80s, and called it Eat It. That's perfectly protected under parody law, but it turns out that when he did Yoda using the tune from Lola by the Kinks, he didn't owe anything to George Lucas, but he did have to pay a royalty to the Kinks because he wasn't parodying their music. The upshot of it, though, is that because our Photoshop contests are completely parody, we're 100% protected. So basically, we get these occasional Digital Millennium Copyright Act cease and desist notices. In particular, we got one, I'm trying to think when I received it. I think it was back last December from a guy named Michael Crook, who, I'm trying to think what his claim to fame was. I'm not exactly sure what the deal was with that guy. I think he was had cracked into somebody's server or had put up a fake trying to if he could get people to admit weird stuff over email or something like that. But I was turned onto this by the guys at BoingBoing.net. They were having problems with this guy serving them with cease and desist. So we did a Photoshop of his photo from Fox News, which, not that we needed it, but we had permission from Fox News to use the original version of it. And so he wrote, my policy on cease and desist is always wait until the third time, just trash the first two, and that if they're really serious, they'll get back to you. So he wrote me the third time, and finally I gave him a one-line response, which is basically I said, you can take your fake DMCA complaint and blow it out your ass.
Hey, Drew, I got a question for you. Do you think Steve Jobs would get annoyed if we did an Apple parody on the show? We were thinking of doing an episode of Apple Elitist Radio at some point.
Oh, there you go. I think he likes them, actually, because it's just more publicity for those guys if it succeeds.
No,
he might get a little annoyed if we use actual clips of him, though.
Yeah, he might. It depends. I think that was done over the last year where they had that fake G Steve Jobs site where the guy was pretending to be for a while. But, yeah, and he said nothing about that. I think it just helps for publicity.
Yeah, but see, you don't know what Pat was intending to do. And what Pat was intending to do what would have gotten him in big, big trouble.
Yep.
Okay.
I'm just using his own words with little clips in between.
Yes.
Well, wasn't there recently a couple of cases related to radio shows that were using soundboards like that? I don't remember. It's very, very fuzzy for me, as lots of things are. But there was some case that came up not too long ago where radio stations were actually using sound clips of celebrities like Arnold Schwarzenegger. And they were calling people and pranking them with these soundboards. I don't remember what the upshot of that was, but I thought that they were allowed to do that.
They are. The gray area in the law is that if it confuses people into thinking that it's the actual celebrity calling them, and this is where it gets kind of weird, because it's a long shot argument. The people that they're calling believe that the celebrities are calling them, and nobody listening to the radio show believes that it's the celebrity doing the gag. So they're suing under the pretense that they're fooling the radio listeners into believing that it's a celebrity. But in reality, that actually doesn't stand up. I don't know what the result of those court cases were. I do know what you're talking about, but my suspicion is they probably either got tossed or nothing came of it.
I have a question for you about something you said. And maybe you can explain this a little further, or I'll have to go searching them out. But you had said, regarding Weird Al Yankovic, Eat It was a parody, but Yoda was not. Why was it?
Yoda was a parody. He parodied Star Wars, but the problem was he used a tune from the Kinks, which had nothing to do with anything. And if he had been parodying the song from the Kinks, that would have been one thing. But he was actually going after George Lucas, and they sued and successfully won that case.
That seems like splitting hairs there, though.
Well, yeah, I mean, when you get right down to it, that pretty much is the legal system right there.
Yeah, and did the three words SCO mean anything to anyone?
Well, yeah, but
there you go. Exactly.
Speaking of SCO, you can get some stocks for really cheap now.
Yeah, they're going fire sale.
You know what, we were talking on FARC about trying to do a prank where when their stock was sinking so low, and I actually asked about this, and I was told not to do it, but we were talking about maybe trying to do a leverage buyout, not ourselves, but basically get a whole bunch of people together that read FARC, because we've got 3.5 million readers, and see if we could get everybody to buy SCO stock and basically get a controlling interest and then vote to stop this bullshit that they're doing. I talked to a lawyer about that, though, and he said that that's pretty close to manipulating the stock market, which will send you to jail in a heartbeat. And I was like, well, okay, never mind. I'll think of something else.
The SEC probably would not be too happy about that.
No, and like I said, I got two kids. I don't need to go to jail anytime soon on purpose, so we'll see how it goes.
It would be funny, though.
Oh, yes.
That's something to add to the list of things to bring, though, is bring your bail money for Ohio Linux, though. You never know. You never, never know.
Well, Pat's rich. He can bail us all out.
Right. Oh, yeah. It's up 4 cents today. I'm sorry.
You can count on that.
It was trading at 16 cents, but it went up 4 cents today.
What did they do to go up?
20 cents now?
It's at 20 cents right now.
How'd that happen?
Yeah, that's a deal.
Doesn't it get it like delisted at that price?
It does, yeah. It becomes penny stock and they get delisted by the market.
The pink sheet. It's always funny to me to see I think it's after a certain period of time they get delisted, but then you know, invariably a couple of months later you start getting spam in your mailbox about that particular company. So I'm waiting for the email spam about SCO. Buy now. We're going to push it up. Buy now. Waiting for that to come. That'll be to me like, you know, that'll be the icing on the cake.
This one's a mover today.
We need a Nigerian scam, email scam, to bail out Daryl McBride. He needs to store his $30 million somewhere. $300 million in your account.
You know, I bet you the guys at 411eater.com could probably come up with a pretty plausible one on that. That's a great site.
It is. That is awesome. They do some really good stuff on there. I like the pictures they get.
So what other questions do you guys have about Linux Fest? We haven't talked about the keynote, have we?
No, we haven't. There's two keynotes.
Who's doing the keynote?
Max Spevek. Spevek. I'm not sure how you pronounce his name.
From the Fedora Project.
Yeah, he is a... correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe he is currently receiving his paycheck from Red Hat.
Yes, he is. He's the community leader paid by Red Hat.
And he is going to be talking about, I'm not sure if struggles are the right word, but his experiences in trying to get Red Hat to really listen to what the community has to say and to sort of give Fedora its wings. So I think that should be a pretty interesting talk. He's got a lot of really good ideas. I've had a couple of chats with him on IRC, and I'm very interested to see where Fedora goes under his stewardship. I haven't really been a big Fedora fan for a couple of reasons, I think he's got a great idea for where to take things, and I'm interested. Like I said, I'm interested in seeing where he goes with it.
Yeah, we know Max. He's been on the show a couple times, and he's very interested in improving the distribution. And he's always, you know, open to suggestions and feedback.
I think a lot of people take, you know, a lot of people, I mean, I'm included in this. I'm a Red Hat bigot. I mean, I love Red Hat over all the other distributions. I'm more comfortable with Red Hat and Red Hat derivatives like CentOS. But I think the problem that most of us in the commercial world have with Fedora is that it's really edge technology, and it's a little bit too much on the edge for a long-term change management and stability type implementation. Now, I come from a very different perspective than a lot of other open source people come from, so I'm perfectly willing to listen to other viewpoints on this. But personally, having built distributions, having done a lot of work with Red Hat derivatives, I've seen what happens when something doesn't really doesn't really pass the full quality control, and I've seen stuff come back and bite you in the ass several years down the road. And that's what I get scared about with Fedora, or have been scared about with Fedora. But Fedora 7 seems to be a real departure from that. I mean, it seems to have a lot of the new technology, but it also seems to be packaged and wrapped really well.
Are you yourself a Fedora user?
No. I've thrown it up a couple of times. I've used it in a couple of clinches when some of the hardware was supported in Fedora that wasn't. But generally for production, I'm deploying CentOS or Red Hat Enterprise Linux.
Okay. What does Fark run on?
FreeBSD.
BSD.
That's good stuff.
It doesn't crash.
Now, are you...
No, we crash because when it goes down, I tell my sysadmin, just leave it because I get a day off, so it's great.
Now, are you yourself a regular BSD user?
I used to be, not so much anymore. I ran an ISP back in the mid-90s, and pretty much since I quit doing that in 2002, my knowledge of that has been fading rapidly, so I'm disappearing. But our main guy, Mike Andrews, who is the guy that runs the back-end stuff, is going to be at Linux Fest as well with me, and he'll be zipping around there talking everybody's ear off. It's great.
Well, Mike's a lot of fun. You can get him riled up on FreeBSD versus Linux pretty easily.
Yeah, exactly. He's not evangelical about it. He likes to discuss it.
So what is the closing keynote going to be on? Do you know? Because I don't think it's really listed here other than it being a closing keynote. And that's Bradley
Coon. I got to imagine that SCO's going to come up somewhere there. But it's... At this point, Bradley's been a little bit tight-lipped about what he's going to be talking about. And I'm okay with that. A little mystery is always kind of a good thing. It'll be interesting to see. I think what's particularly interesting is having Drew counterpointed to Bradley. Because Drew's got a lot of knowledge on, obviously, copyright and media law, and Bradley obviously looks at software law. So... I think it's going to be interesting to hear what Drew has to say. And Drew, what the hell are you going to talk about? Beer?
Actually, I'm going to talk about media patterns and how you want to get some publicity for something, how you set up a story the media can't resist grabbing.
Cool. And I think Bradley's going to probably just talk about, I don't know, I don't want to speculate. I don't want to speculate, because Bradley will talk about what he talks about. I'm sure it'll be fantastic, though.
So Drew, is it true that, you know, there's no such thing as bad press?
Yeah, actually there is. Just ask Michael Jackson. He'll tell you.
You know, he's still loved in Europe.
Yeah, and Japan, too, for some reason, which is really odd. But, I think at the point where you become labeled a pedophile and people are, like, running up to you and trying to punch you all the time. Well, like, for example, O.J. Simpson that just had this trouble recently. The guy travels around with four bodyguards at all times, armed. Because that's how much trouble he has. I don't think he particularly appreciates publicity.
Well, he was looking for the killers in the Las Vegas hotel room.
That's right. He's got his, actually he uses a special golf club to detect them, but so far it hasn't worked.
You know, maybe somebody can enlighten me, Drew, because I don't even read. When I see O.J. Simpson, I turn to a different page or click a different link because I just don't care. But what's the story there? Something about sports memorabilia and golf clubs and...
It's kind of unclear right now because everybody's giving a different story, but supposedly there's a room at the, I think it was at the Palms, or he was arrested at the Palms, or wherever it was. I don't think it happened at the Palms, but there was a room full of sports memorabilia for whatever reason, and he basically showed up over there to take it back or something. The problem is that when you ask people, everybody's got a different story. For example, one of the people that supposedly brought a gun in with OJ claims that he was there to get married that weekend. So I think there's a lot of suspicious alibis flying around, and basically nobody has any idea. The only thing the media knows at this point is if you put OJ's name on it, they'll get a lot of clicks, and that's what they're doing.
But that's
so,
what they do.
So this guy and OJ were going to get married?
Yeah, I think something like that. I'm not entirely sure, but...
Nevada allows that, huh?
Yeah, everybody's trying to kind of plea deal right now, would be my guess, and the first guy to do it's going to sing like a canary, so it'll be great.
So instead of a bouquet of flowers, OJ brought a gun.
Yeah, and apparently that's not kosher at a gay wedding, I guess. That's what I understand.
Well, I thought you shoot each other at the end. I don't know.
That's in Texas.
Okay. Now I understand. Okay. That, let me,
very, well, very interesting.
Question. How come Drew... Everybody else gets like 40 minutes, an hour. How come Drew only gets 15 minutes?
I'm sure Drew will get more than 15 minutes.
And but I don't even see Drew listed under the speakers.
Yeah, the simple answer is that we just ran out of time, and we couldn't fit everybody in, and I think, I don't know, Drew, if we have an open slot, you want to talk for an hour?
Yeah, I could probably do that. I also plan on continue talking at the bar until they throw me out, so, you know, it's not like I won't ever stop.
Yeah, the after party is going to be kind of interesting this year, to sort of take things in a different direction. The Google, I still am amazed by this, but Google basically said, yeah, just send us the bill for the after party. We said, okay. So in 2003, we used the Hyatt Regency Union Room, which is probably about 40,000 square feet. It was enough to house 500 people for that year. Well, we have that whole room for the after party this year, and I mean, we've got food this year. I mean, they're going to have pizza and pasta and ham and macaroni and cheese and all sorts of good stuff. I mean, a lot of people have always complained about, you know, your after party, you've got a lot of liquor, but there's nothing to eat, and we have to go get something on our stomachs before we come back and drink all that booze. And this year we've got a. You know, I mean, I look at it, and, you know, Beth, of course, bless her heart, because Linux Fest would never exist without Beth Lynn doing the work she does. But she looks at it and goes, well, what about dessert? I'm like...
She's on the IRC, by the way.
Yeah, we've got beer. We've got beer. We've got beer and pretzels. Okay, maybe pretzels, but the beer. We need beer. And I just think that the after party is such an important... demonstration of the whole concept of community, which really is what Ohio Linux Fest is about. It's not about the speakers and what people are talking about. That's good. It's not about the sponsors and what they're talking about. At the core, the principle that we try to uphold there is one of community, which is the one opportunity for some of these people to come out from behind the computer and actually physically interact with somebody in a totally different environment. So a lot of really cool things happen when you get people into the right environment, and I think that without the after party, for me, is one of those experiences where I get a chance to stand next to John Mad Dog Hall or Max Spivak or any of these other guys and just have a beer with them and just chat in the same concept that Drew talked about at the FARC party. I mean, this is the whole reason we get together, guys. It's not to see a speaker. It's to actually communicate and to talk about what our ideas are and to really, truly exemplify the concept that software, open source software in particular, can change the world. But we've got to want to do that. We've got to be willing to reach out to people and take that chance. So
we don't like reaching out to people. We actually discourage that on this show.
Dan is so cynical.
Dan, I didn't say reach around. I said reach out.
Go on. Speaking of the after party.
We don't appreciate reciprocation either, so. Reach arounds are not expected.
At the after party, you got dual core, some nerd core going on, man. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, once again, Froggy and Tiger from Nauticon are handling the responsibilities for making sure that the entertainment's there. And it's been kind of interesting balancing Google's desires to basically make sure that you know, the community atmosphere is there with Nauticon. Nauticon, it wasn't hard, but it was interesting to see the two of them interact and to figure out how the whole after party should go. I mean, this year I think the after party is going to be really structured from a perspective of there are some things going on at the after party that you don't want to miss. I mean, there's some things that will be given away there and stuff that you're not going to get a chance to get at the regular conference. We managed to break out our sponsorship packages this year, and so lots of t-shirts will be given out and all sorts of other stuff that you wouldn't normally have the chance to get. So definitely make it a point to hang out. We've got the room until maybe 2 a.m., I think. It says midnight officially. That's when I think they stop serving drinks. But we're going to have open bar. Let me rephrase that. We're going to have the food's there until it runs out, and the beer's there until it runs out, and then you can buy whatever drinks you want. But there definitely will be some interesting stuff. But Dual Core, I haven't heard anything, but it sounds very interesting, and I'm all for it.
So
actually, I can talk about Dual Core. They at Dotacon gave me one of their CDs, and I, along with a couple other people too, I got about 3 CDs, I think, 3 or 4 at Dotacon. And I listened to them all, and didn't like any of them except for Dual Cores. Their stuff is actually good. I did like their stuff. It's really enjoyable.
Cool.
I'm not sure they're physically
going to be there, are they? I think we're just not a conscious featuring the music by them.
I don't know if it's the music or whatnot, but the upshot of it is it's good stuff. I mean, it's definitely worth sticking around for.
Alan was going to do some breakdancing for us.
Okay.
No, he's going to do line dancing. Alan doesn't break dance, he line dances.
Don't that too.
To Tim McGraw. I have a question. Who made the choice for ham? I mean, you got like pizza, pasta, and then ham.
The choice for ham was made by the budget.
Oh, okay.
As ham is filet mignon or lobster.
It just seems like pizza and then pasta, you know, popcorn, macaroni and cheese, and then ham.
We wanted to go for the prime rib barbing station, but it was like $16 a person.
That's a bit much.
Wow. Yeah.
That would have been
and
cool
ham,
though.
Ham was about 8.
There you go.
You know, you should send someone to like Costco and just get like a 100-pound bag of like cocktail shrimp.
you know this
100-pound bag.
This is the thing that people don't understand. When you have something like the Hyatt, because believe me, I understand. Well, you could go to Costco and we could throw a massive party.
I know where you're going
with
this.
For the amount of money. But our contractual liability is basically we have to use the specific vendors that are approved on their list, which is why our coffee costs $500 a pot.
Yep. Anytime you go through like a convention center or hotel, you got to go through them for everything.
And then they tack on this 20%, you know, sanity. I don't even know what they call it. I call it an insanity fee, but they call it like a service fee. And I'm like, you know, I better be getting, you know, a little bit extra on the side for the amount of money I'm paying for this service.
At the Linux World Expo in Boston, I remember they gave us paperwork if we needed things shipped to the cubicle. They would charge you like $500 to move it from the loading dock to you know, your area, because it was all union, you know?
Yep. Welcome to the wonderful world of conferences.
That's what happens when you got to do a conference. You know, that's where these people make their money.
You talked about logistics earlier. These are the logistics that we go crazy over because we have to figure out all the details. Beth and Mike and all, you know, everybody else, Paul, all those guys figure this stuff out. I just go out and I try to find the money. I let them figure out how to deal with it. But, you know, there's all sorts of things where if we buy a certain amount of food, we get a discount on a certain amount of space. Like, for example, the Hyatt's giving us the room for free, but we got to spend the balance of you know, $8,000 we have to spend on food and liquor to get the room for free. Otherwise, it's a $5,000 room rental. So, I mean, that's to me, that's one of the toughest things about this conference is actually, you know, people kind of, I think people take it for granted, but we got to work our butts off to try and figure out the budget and to make every penny count. So we're always scrimping. We're always making every single dollar go as far as it possibly can. And, you know, the best thing that people can do is come and have a great time and show us that all that work that we put into it, it really, really is worth it. I mean, that's what we're looking for. We're doing this because some of us can't write code, and I'll say that for myself. I don't want to speak for anybody else. Some of us can't really, you know, contribute to open source the way that we other people can. So we look at it as our responsibility to contribute to the community by giving the community a forum to actually physically exist.
And you guys do a hell of a job too. I mean,
exactly.
Last year it was the best convention / festival, whatever you want to call it, I've ever been to.
We appreciate that. We don't want to disappoint. We want to raise the bar every year to get a little bit better. Next year, we have 118,000 square feet.
Wow.
And this is coming off the heels. Last year, we were at the Linux World Expo in Boston. We were in the .org pavilion, and we were there for 3 days. And while overall it was a really, really good experience, we met a lot of cool people, made a lot of connections and stuff, it's a totally different vibe.
Yeah.
You know, Linux World Expo has become very corporate, you know, which is fine in itself. It's good that, you know, people are making money off of Linux, but the heart and soul of it is the community, and Ohio Linux Fest is a real community event.
Yeah, that's the thing. A lot of people ask me, how do you compare yourself to Linux World? And I say, we don't. I mean, Linux World is a conference that has a completely different goal. And the only thing that's in common is the word Linux. I would love for Linux World to embrace some of the community aspects, but to date I don't think that's happened. So you've got other conferences like ScaleX and the other OLF, the Ontario Linux Fest, and Linux Fest Northwest. Those guys are picking up the slack there, and they're answering a need that's out there. The people have a need to feel like they are a part of a community, and to contribute, and to physically meet, and they want to do it. People want to do it without having to spend $400. You know, that's the other thing. Linux Fest has always been free, and as long as we can possibly do it, we will make it free. We will let the sponsors, and we will let the people that want to contribute. But we're not going to bar anyone from walking in the door. If you have an interest in Linux and open source, show up.
Damn straight.
Yep, it's a good time, man. If you guys live, you know, anywhere within, you know, the region, you know, within driving distance, or, you know, please go and check it out. It's definitely worth it, you know. It's even if you just go all day on Saturday, it's going to be a great time, and it'll be a good experience. You'll meet a lot of cool people who are also into Linux, and you'll hear some good talks, and it should be a good time.
One of the things that I just posted not too long ago was a group of us got together and wrote something called The Hitchhiker's Guide to Ohio Linux Fest, which if you check out on our website at www.ohiolinux.org, you will find an article up there, if you search for it, called Hitchhiker's Guide to OLF. And that has... if you've never been to a Linux Fest and you're wondering what it's about, and you're wondering what, you know, how you might want to, you know, what's going to work for you, what's not going to work for you, it's got a lot of good tips about what to expect and the mindset to get in before you come, some of the things you might want to consider as far as logistics. Cost has always been a concern for us, so there's all sorts of suggestions in there about room sharing and ride sharing and other opportunities to make it a really, really cost-effective way to see some great people, talk about some great subjects, and become a part of that community. Oh, yeah, and bring some canned food with you.
You guys are doing a food drive, right?
Yeah, last year, after the after party, which is the VIP party that happens after the after party goes away, we had a ton of stuff left over that we had purchased just all sorts of geek food and sandwiches, bread, peanut butter, all that stuff, and nobody was really in the mood to take it home, so somebody suggested, let's call one of the local homeless shelters and drop it off. And for me personally, that was a really striking moment where I realized that two communities can cross over for the benefit of one another, such that Ohio Linux Fest and what we were able to do, we were able to then give to a different community that actually met their needs. So that concept, we talked a little bit about how to implement that and whether it was appropriate for Ohio Linux Fest to do that or whether it wasn't. And finally, I said, screw it. So I basically, as one of the owners of N2Net, who is also a sponsor of Linux Fest, said, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. It won't be an official Linux Fest thing. It won't be official OLF. You know, that way there won't be any kind of question about it. But I'm going to do this. And somebody sent me a link to a YouTube video about the Salvation Army's pantry being empty going into the holiday season. And nobody wants to go hungry, especially those that are, you know, especially those that are unable to make ends meet. And some people are there for a long time. Other people are there just for a short period of time. But everybody has a right to feed their family. And one of the things that I decided to do was I'm not going to get a whole lot of huge amount of business from Ohio Linux Fest. And I talked to one of my sales guys who says, yeah, aside from a couple of colo leads that closed, most people already know what they want, so we can't really do much. So I said, let's use our booth for public good. Let's collect canned food for the Salvation Army of Columbus and basically bring your food, bring a can of food, drop it off at our booth. We'll get it to the Salvation Army of Columbus, and find me, I'll buy you a beer.
When do you guys stop giving to the community?
We don't. I don't think we do. I don't think you ever can. I think it's one of those things that you constantly have to do. For me, I mean, the honest truth is I don't like people. So I try to stay away from people. You know, I'm much more, you know, if you pick my natural tendencies, I'd rather be out in the backpack in the woods. But, you know, there's this part of me that says I have a talent and I have to be involved in the community because it's for the betterment of the world. And whether that's the Linux community or, you know, some other community, my local community, I have to be involved in that, and I have to contribute my efforts. And for me to not do that would suck. I mean, that would be against my principles. So the honest truth is I think that you never stop. You use that as an opportunity to refresh yourself and to move forward and to hopefully enrich somebody else's life along the way. At the end, when I die, I want people to look back on what I've done at the live and say, God, that guy was an asshole, but he really did a lot of good. That's kind of where I'm at. So I think the answer is you never stop giving to the community. I never stop taking from it, so why should I expect to stop giving back to it?
That's beautiful. bring a tear to my eye.
Yeah. Should I belch right now?
That would be a good follow-up.
Yeah. But, no, seriously, it's, you know, that's... All the hype aside, that's really, I think, the motivating factor that brings everybody to the table to put together their efforts. I mean, we had 100 volunteers last year. I have no idea who these people were, but thank you. You know, we couldn't do it without you. The amount of people that show up on Friday night say, I want to help. You know, hey, you manage the doors. Hey, you're going to be working with me on the show floor. Hey, you're going to be working with the speakers. You're going to be a speaker gopher, a speaker coordinator. You're going to work registration. We always have jobs that can be done. You know, nobody takes a paycheck for this stuff. So it's all volunteer-based. All community.
I'm checking out the forums at FARC regarding the entry of the Ohio Linux Fest. Some of the comments are downright evil.
Evil or
that's
funny?
That's pretty normal. I wouldn't worry about it.
Both.
Comments for
we're
what?
On FARC.
Hmm. What are you talking about, Pat?
Here, I'll post the link in the IRC for you, man.
This better not go to Tub Girl or something.
No, I don't do that. You do that.
I wouldn't worry about getting trash in the forums on Fark. That's pretty normal. No big deal.
Yeah.
If TV show we're running.
If Dan ever posts a URL, do not go to it. Word of advice.
Wow, that's a nice picture.
Oh my God, that's pretty funny. Linux Fest, the place is going to smell like BO and Limburger cheese. I'll pack my gas mask. Well, I'll tell you, there's one of those
slogans.
That's great. One of the things that I put in the Hitchhiker's Guide to Ohio Linux Fest is that it's an opportunity for you to touch, feel, and sometimes smell the community.
That's not a ringing endorsement right there. Pat, I thought you were putting a link to those comments in there, and all I got was this Slackware chick, which is a good thing, by the way.
Yeah, it is a good thing. Here are the comments.
Oh, okay. All right, that's a little different now.
At least you know my links are good, you know?
Hey, my links are good too, but for a different reason.
They're horrible, Dan.
Here, I'll put another link for everybody.
Do not go to it.
Huh?
Oh, this is great. Linux Fest, huh? So you guys are going to run the brewery the complete opposite way that it should be done, having to jump through dozens of hoops and install several new devices just to make the machines compatible with your new organization? Then, of course, you could brag about how different you are.
Yeah, it's pretty normal for the comments. I wouldn't worry about it too much. We link our own TV show here fairly often, and we'll get about, I don't know, close to 100 negative comments, and about 50,000 people will click through. You know, you got to put it into context.
Oh, this is great. Somebody posted a picture of Linus with some guys from the New York blog. That's great.
Is that Ohio Linux Fest, or was that from Linux World Expo?
I don't know. It wasn't from OLF.
Linux World Expo.
That looks like Linux World Expo.
Yeah. I don't think Linus has the time to come to OLF, which is unfortunate. Hey, the Slackware lady is beautiful.
I don't know. Sort of like the devil underneath that one.
They don't show up anymore, do they?
Who's Slackware?
People. No, the BSD devils. They used to always show up at these things, and they haven't come around in a while.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, I haven't seen them in a long time.
That Tron guy, by the way, I saw him up at PenguinCon in Michigan. I'll tell you, that is a conference. I have never been to a sci-fi convention in my life, and we went up there this year to promote Ohio Linux Fest. I got to tell you, I am going back without a doubt, and I'm basically sleeping for a week before I go there. I have never, you know, we talk about virtual reality and how that might change the internet and the experience of the internet. Go to PenguinCon. You can walk through the internet. It's like the internet in 3D. The guys from the NoHack, some sort of a system administration group, they built a Trojan horse that had speakers in it and 1,000 watts of power that spewed fog out of its butt and lasers out of its eyes. And within 20 minutes, there were naked girls on it. I mean, you can't get any better than that.
Were they naked green girls?
No, they weren't. They were naked bondage girls in, old-style bondage stuff.
Yeah, you go to a sci-fi convention, they gotta
take
be green.
Pictures.
Dun, dun, dun. People in the chat are lying. Lying son of a guns. Mm-hmm. Hey, Drew, I have a question for you. What do you have a degree in?
Computer science, actually.
Oh, okay. Are you very familiar with the inner workings of law? Legal issues?
Well, sort of. From two aspects. One, I've been exposed to it just from running FARC, and the other because my mom was an attorney.
Might I perchance ask a question that you might have the answer to?
Sure, or at the very least I could make up something plausible.
That would be fantastic. Not to walk away from the whole Ohio Linux Fest, because it's very important. But this is another topic that's been on my mind for the past couple of weeks. A few weeks ago, who do we have on? It was the guys from...
It was Andrew Krieg from Kulu.
Yeah, there we go.
Who works with Mad Dog.
Yeah, he had mentioned a technology when we had talked about multimedia and Linux, and he had mentioned a technology that the iPhone was using to stream video, particularly from Google Video, YouTube, to the iPhone, which doesn't use Flash right now, but he said that the streaming technology was fantastic and it runs on all operating systems, and that's the next big thing, and that's why he wasn't too concerned about multimedia playback under their devices, particularly through the web and media content through the web. And I was curious about what this technology was, and he kind of didn't know, but long and short of it, it turns out, I think it's 3GP, which is a, what is it, part 14 or 16 of MPEG-4, which kind of brought us around to the MPEG-4 standard and the H.264 MPEG version 10, I believe it is H.264, and the implementation of H.264 in the free software world, which is done with the X.264 project. And in doing a little bit of research on MPEG-4 and H.264 and everything, as to whether or not the playback or the distribution of the technology that uses that under a GPL or an open source license is legal in the United States or countries that support patent rights or patents on software like that. In doing the research on the MPEG-4 standard, it says that MPEG-4 is encumbered by patents and requires a license from the MPEG Licensing Association to be able to make use of the technology.
Sure.
Now, X.264 project is released under the GPL. Now, and they call MPEG-4 or the X.264 version of MPEG-4 an open standard. And I can't, you know, to me, an open standard would mean you'd be able to develop, and talking specifically by software, you'd be able to develop software based off of that open standard and be able to distribute it under the GPL. Because it is an open standard, you'd be able to write your software to adhere to that standard and support it. But yet, you can't do that with MPEG-4 because it's encumbered by patents and proprietary hooks into it, and proprietary software. So how could it still be an open standard? That means the definition of an open standard is kind of muddy and is not what I thought an open standard was.
You know, that's a good question. I don't know the exact answer to that, but I would have to believe that part of it is the open standard is how to make technologies communicate with each other and work well in general. And my guess would be, and also too, when they talk about encumbered with patents, they're not saying that it's actually patented. They're saying that they're implying to me anyways that parts of it are probably patented, and therefore if you actually made something that would use the standard that ended up making you $1 billion, you are likely to get sued in some respect. Much in the same way that this SCO lawsuit we were talking about earlier. Most people don't make the distinction between something you can get sued over and something you can successfully get sued over, which are two completely different things. For example, we were covering a story on FARC not long ago about a woman that was teaching a middle school in England, or the equivalent of middle school in England, who sued her school district for $16 million because they gave her a chair that when she backed up and made a farting noise in her class, every time she did this, would laugh at her. So she sued for $16 million for emotional pain and suffering. Well, that got to the court, and they threw it out immediately. And that's the difference between can sue and can win. So my guess would be is what they're talking about there is that they're talking about not necessarily the entire standard, but parts of it are potentially problematic.
So then could it be really considered an open standard, though?
Well, it depends on to what aspect. If it's an open standard, what they're basically saying is you could probably ground up something and that would qualify for the standard that would work on everybody else's thing. But unless you did that, you would be potentially under liability for patent. Here's the other problem with patent law, too. If you have a patent, the burden of proof shifts. Somebody else has to prove that you don't have the patent legally. And that is very time-consuming. We actually ended up in a situation dealing with something similar to that when I was running my ISP back in the mid-90s under that and antitrust law. And while you can sue and can win against somebody who's got a patent or, you know, sue under antitrust law, it's not recommended because it takes a long time and you can actually bankrupt yourself trying to do it, trying to sue somebody else for that.
So it sounds like to me what you just said is you can say something's an open standard, and if you implement it, you may or may not get sued, and if you do, it may or may not be successful. But if you are sued, the burden of proof, if it violates a patent, the burden of proof that it does not violate the patent falls on your shoulders, as opposed to the patent holder saying, it's kind of the reverse of innocent until proven guilty, you're guilty until proven innocent.
Yeah, beating somebody that's got a patent is extremely hard. That's why everybody patents every damn thing under the sun, because they know that.
So given that encumbrance, is it possible to release something like X264 under the GPL and distribute it in the United States?
I would suspect that it actually probably boils down to whether or not you made $1 billion off of it, and if you did, they would come after you, and if you didn't, then they would leave you alone. And that's the sad truth of the way the legal system works in regard to intellectual property.
So the license and the patent are null and meaningless until they're called into question in a legal court, is what it boils down
to. Well, in fact, there are guys that actually, I forget what there's a name for them in the legal circles, but they're basically the predatory patenters that will patent any damn thing they can think of in the hopes that somebody makes something similar, and then they go after them. It's a really bizarre thing. I was trying to think of an example. There was something that happened on FARC not too long ago. It wasn't to do with us. It was in an article we covered, but it was a similar thing where it was a guy had filed one of these patents, and basically they couldn't beat him on it because although this guy had never invented anything to do with the technology that he patented, he did patent it. And the companies, rather than spend millions of dollars trying to beat him, just decided to pay him a fee and be done with it.
Drew, while I...
patent law in the United States is all screwed up, basically.
Yeah. While I pretty much understand your answer, I don't like it because it confuses and irritates me. Because it's
like
so
it
illogical.
Right,
Dan, basically, we're fucked.
Right. I mean, it's a catch-22. And the only way to win is to not play the game.
Yeah, basically. Or the only way to win is play the game not knowing that you're supposed to fail and then succeed in spite of that.
Well, there you go. So
that's it. Brute force stupidity. That's it.
Yes.
My approach.
Exactly.
You can't do that. Why? You just can't do that. I just did. That's illegal. That's immoral. Well, you'd love it, wouldn't you?
Exactly. Like they say, it's better to have forgiveness than permission.
Yeah.
But, you know, something like that, though, kind of is an impediment to the adoption of free and open source software, which is very frustrating.
That's why U.S. patent law needs a major overhaul.
Patent reform.
And that really sucks, because we're just sitting here talking about, like, one small use, X264, and it causes this much of a confusion and turmoil.
And for people who supposedly know what we're talking about.
Yes. I don't know. I hate it. Freaking media sucks. Codex. That's why we should all use Theora and Aug, right?
That's one solution.
What's FARC written on? ASP? Cold Fusion?
Perl, actually.
Perl on Windows Server.
Okay, by MySQL.
Well, there you go. Now, that's smart technology.
Not on Windows. He's on BSD.
I know he is. I was just being an ass. With,
and being an ass? No.
Front page extensions.
Yeah, it's all .NET all the way.
Yeah. Speaking of .NET, what's your opinion on
Mono
and Moonlight?
Don't know anything about it.
Well,
mononucleosis sucks. Don't get it.
Yeah, smart guy. I don't know. Well, that's cool.
I think mono's a really cool concept. In the way that Java was a very cool concept too. I don't know if one of the I don't know. I mean, how compatible is mono with regular .NET applications running under the regular Microsoft stuff? Can you just take a regular .NET application, throw it in mono, and have it work? Or do you have a whole bunch of porting crap to do to make it work cleanly on another platform?
From what I understand, what I've heard is it depends what version of .NET and mono you're using, number one, whether it makes use of WinForms, and whether that those calls have been written into mono yet to take into account that supposedly a lot of stuff I've heard is you just recompile the code under the mono C# compiler and you're good to go. And I don't think you could take a pre-compiled .NET application and just run the binary under mono. I could be wrong, but from what I understand, it does have to be compiled.
I think you have to recompile it.
Yeah. And what they're striving for is almost like, you know, it's write once, compile multiple architectures, whatever.
Huh.
But, I mean, some of the mono... I heard somewhere about a year ago, they were saying that there's more mono-based applications out there than there are .NET applications.
I would think that's probably reasonable to assume.
And I'm kind of like on the fence about mono. I like FSpot and some of the other technology that, you know, programs that have been developed under mono, but yet at the same time, there's the confusion, you know, and question as to whether this ultimately becomes a Trojan horse for Microsoft to come back down the line and say, hey, you guys are infringing our patented technology. I don't know. That's one of the concerns.
Well, isn't C# an example of an open standard for a language, though?
It is. It is.
So a compiler that compiles C#, how could that infringe on Microsoft's rights?
I believe it was Microsoft that submitted .NET as an ISO standard, which I think has been approved. They call it an open standard, and Mono is a implementation of that, they don't make use of Microsoft's code, but the concepts are patented by Microsoft. Not the code, but the concepts, I guess. Isn't that what gets patented? Not code, but concepts?
Processes can be patented.
I don't know.
I think
a lawyer.
You can pretty much patent anything, but I guess the way that I mean,
intellectual property.
What about all the people that have written? Yeah. Well, what about if you've taken that intellectual property and you've published a standard on it and said this is an open standard that anybody may use this standard? It's been approved and ratified by the ISO. What sort of legal ground would they have to stand on to come back and say you can't?
I don't know. MPEG-4 is an open standard, but...
Again, it's the difference between somebody actually being able to come back and say something legally that, you know, it's the can sue, can win. Can they sue you? Probably. Can they win? Don't know about that. That may not be the case. But they can make it not worth your while to even get in that situation because Microsoft has more money than God.
Right. I don't know. It's so confusing.
Well, you know, there's always BASIC.
Isn't BASIC patented too?
Probably. Somebody gets a royalty for everything you do in BASIC.
I can't remember
the name of it, but there was an asterisk application that somebody wrote, which was written in this BASIC language that is. You write it in BASIC, and it cross-compiles and creates the same app for Linux, Mac OS, and Windows. So it basically takes your... You write in this BASIC code, you know, and it gives you all sorts of widgets to use for Windows or whatever the heck the particular correct terminology is for little things of programs that you put together to do things on screen. It takes all that and basically builds cross-platform applications for you from one set of source code. So it's kind of cool. It's a neat little application called, what the hell is it called? Let me see if I can open it up. AST Assistant, A-S-T Assistant. And it sits in your tray if you're running Windows or if you're running Linux. And it monitors the manager port on your Asterisk server and then will pop up a message saying you've got an inbound call. And give you information about it. It also monitors your queues and lets you set your call forwarding and other stuff on it. So it's really cool. Let me see if I can find the web page for it. It's www.orbis.net/ASTASSISTANT. So www.orbis.net/AskAssistant. And the technology is called Real Basic.
Yeah, I've heard of Real Basic. I've never actually used it, though. They've talked a lot about Real Basic on the Linux Action Show.
I played around a little bit with it. It looks interesting, but it is proprietary language.
Okay.
You know, if that matters to anybody.
There's a lot of people that'll, you know, I'm one of those people that I look at practical applications. If there's a commercial package that I can roll out that will create Linux code that makes it impossible for someone to decompile that and, you know, create a derivative work, if I'm building a commercial application or if I don't want users mucking about with the source code, and hell, commercial applications are great. I don't think proprietary and commercial are necessarily evil words, which may get me thrown out of the bar at a Linux conference, but I do think that there's a definite place for that, but I definitely think there's also a real tangible benefit from having an open platform as well.
What I'm looking forward to is an open phone platform. That's what I'm really looking forward to.
Yeah.
An unblocked phone that runs on any network, with applications that you can freely download and install, and works great.
Yeah.
Now, you got OpenMoco, which is, they're looking to build a tool set with GTK libraries, and Trolltech announced that they're completely releasing their whole stacked Qtopia for phones under the GPL, and they released a version for the phone that the OpenMoco runs on, the Neo 1973, and supposedly Qtopia runs better than OpenMoco at this point.
The bummer about that is the phone isn't coming out until like December now.
What, the new version?
No, the non-developer version, the version you're supposed to use.
Right. We'll see. It's definitely something to keep an eye on. I would love to have an open phone platform that I'd be able to just, you know, to go over to whatever carrier I'd like. You know, in the United States, the carriers, the cell phone carriers, are notorious for locking down features and, you know, disabling things. And
yeah.
If I was able to get around that legally, I would be happy.
Yeah, I don't, you know, well, you know, they're just trying to basically preserve a monopoly revenue opportunity.
You're talking about the iPhone.
They're trying to. No, I'm talking about more than just the iPhone.
I know, all the phones. All.
Yeah, like I have a Verizon Windows CE-based PDA/cell phone/camera/MP3 player/put-it-all-together, kind of... thing, and I love the functionality that I get while I'm mobile. I hate the fact that since it's Windows, I have to reboot it 6 times a day. But it just bugs me because there are very specific things that are turned off in the firmware that you have to load from Verizon. For example, some Bluetooth features and functions that are available on unlocked or other networks that if you do want to run the stock firmware on, that are just blocked in the Verizon firmware. So I hear you, man. I feel the pain. I'd love to be able to run whatever I want on that platform. That's the last great frontier, though, you know, the phone network.
Exactly. So it's definitely a project that, you know, I'd like to keep an eye on in the next couple of years.
Well, I'm gonna need to wrap up here and go to bed.
It makes three of us.
Beers, and I'm feeling kind of mellow, and an extra hour of sleep tonight would do me a lot of good tomorrow.
I hear you, man. Well, thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, thank you very much, Greg.
We're looking forward to going to Columbus next week.
Absolutely. I'm flying in from Phoenix on Thursday night, so I gotta go to Astor, and leaving for on Sunday for AstorCon in Phoenix, and then getting out of there early on Thursday to come back for Linux Fest. So it's gonna be a lot of fun. I'll be operating on very few REM cycles.
Busy guy.
Yeah, you know. Luckily, my October is looking pretty empty, and I'm going to keep it that way.
That's good. Well, thank you very much for coming on.
You are welcome.
And we'll see you.
I'm really looking forward to seeing you guys on Friday night at the Barley's. Drew, as ever, it'll be a blast to drink beer with you.
Can't wait.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that we can show Drew a good time. Show him that the Linux crowd knows how to party.
I don't think he'll be disappointed.
I'm not too worried about it. It should be a good time.
And if you are disappointed, it's Alan's fault.
Exactly.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Greg.
You're welcome. Thank you very much, and have a good night, guys.
Later.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Dun, dun, dun.
I think I'm going to haul out myself. I got to get another beer here anyway, so.
No problem.
All right,
thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much, Drew. We'll see you in 8 days.
Sounds good. See you soon.
Thanks a lot. Keep up the great work.
Take care.
Bye.
Good night.
And, Alan, thank you very much for coming on tonight. And
good night, Al.
Yeah. It was great being on and everything.
I'd like to say thank you to you, Link. You weren't too talkative tonight, but, what more can we say, pal? You still hating freedom?
Yeah.
Excellent. So did you just install Windows over there? What version, XP or Vista?
Vista.
And you went out and bought yourself a brand new MacBook Pro. True?
Dual boot.
Dual boot
with Vista.
Did you get an iPhone, too?
I feel that money from the new job.
Yeah, he's rolling in the bucks.
Excellent. Well, it's good. It's good. You know, I actually had the opportunity to play with an iPhone.
What do you think?
It was interesting. Personally, you know, and I'm not a big Apple fan, which you might come as some surprise. But I'm not a big fan of Apple, and I played around with the iPhone, and some of it was pretty nice. I mean, I could see it would be interesting to me for a few hours, maybe, you know, maybe a day or two, but I think, I don't know, it's just too limited for me. It was nice. The interface was all right. Once you got the using the keyboard on there, was pretty easy, I thought. Once I got the hang of it there, it only took me a couple minutes, but one of the guys at work has an iPhone. But I personally would never buy one. I just feel too limited by it.
What's idiotic is, why are they restricting third-party application development for it? That's moronic.
One of the excuses I heard them saying is they are so concerned that should a third-party network-based application go haywire, it could bring down the AT&T infrastructure.
That's a lot of crap, man. If they check the applications and make sure that it's a good application and it's up to, you know, snuff, then it really shouldn't be a problem, you would think.
Yeah, I think they're more worried about the phone actually crashing. They want to make sure that that phone never crashes, and the way they can do that is by being sure that they're the only ones that put applications on.
Yeah, they control everything, the hardware, the software, everything. Well, it was pretty funny that they dropped the price by $200, and all the people that ran out and got them, you know, the very first day, they were all screaming bloody murder.
I think it's a vocal few that are screaming, but the people who wanted it, you know, wanted it instantly were more than willing to pay $600. They didn't care.
Hey,
they got their amount of, you know, their 15 minutes of fame by running around going, look, I got an iPhone. So they really don't care. They'll take the $100 that they get back, and they'll just pour it back into another product.
Yeah, that's not much of a loss for Apple. Oh, we'll give you store credit. So that $100 is just what it is. You're going to buy an iPhone case or the iPod case for $100, and more than likely, when you order something, you spend $100. Most people are probably going to spend a little more, so they make additional money on top of it.
Yeah, so they don't really care too much. And besides, you want to wait, you know, if you're even interested in it at all, you want to wait until next year anyways. Second generation, there'll be 3G on it, it'll be faster, more memory.
Never buy
Rev 1.
I couldn't use an iPhone anyhow, because I don't have any Apple systems over here. And I'm sure as hell not giving the software, you know, let me do anything with it on Linux. So, what good is an iPhone, you know, I can't sync it to anything. Bastards.
Well, that's true with all of the new iPod products. There's a crack out there already, but they locked them down so you can't sync them on Linux.
Right.
You can't sync them with anything other than iTunes right now.
They put a SHA-1 hash on
the database.
There
is a crack for it, but
database.
It's a very manual thing still.
Yeah, it sucks. What's the point?
I think the point had a lot to do, not so much was they want to screw other people out of it. I think that's so that they can keep the movie deals and the record deals and stuff. They're able to keep it locked down to them, even though they know people will break it eventually.
It's all about the DRM, my friend.
But didn't they come out saying that DRM, they don't like DRM?
Well, they may not like it, but unfortunately, the record and movie industry still likes it. And if they want to keep those, you know, the 99-cent, you know, record downloads and whatever the movies and stuff cost on it, they've got to play the movie company's games. They got to break down and do concessions to them, and I'm sure that probably had something to do with it. They know that people will crack it and get their stuff off of it and, you know, do whatever they want with it, but they know 90% of the people won't do that. And they're more happy with going, well, you know, if we can foil a couple people that don't really have the technical knowledge to do this, that's all the better. That's just my view. Your mileage may vary.
I'm not running out to get an iPhone anytime soon.
He already has one. No?
No. No. I'm not going to burn my money on that.
I like them, but not like I said. Not first generation. Wait till they have more stuff on them.
That's because Alan doesn't like freedom.
I use whatever works for me.
Shut your mouth. Filthy liar. Filthy freedom hater.
I know, it's evil. I have the MacBook up right now.
You stole Linux on that thing?
I have it in Parallels, yeah.
In other news, if you read my blog, I upgraded my server to Slackware 11 from Slackware 10, and it was such a painless upgrade. It was beautiful. It was all manual. It took me approximately 5 minutes with about a half an hour to an hour preparation. Let's get that right, because when, you know...
Spend the time.
I spent the time to get everything prepared and everything up and ready to go, and brought it down to run level 1, upgraded everything I needed to upgrade, and brought it back up, and that was it. except for the clock, which I knew I should have checked before. I was going to go to Slackware 12, and I started the process to doing that, but for some reason, the new 2.6 kernel will not recognize my SCSI device properly. It comes back. It's weird because I don't kind of understand it. It recognizes the SCSI card, I guess, and it tells me it can't access the swap partition or anything else, and it doesn't recognize the root partition or anything like that, but yet it tells me I can go into maintenance mode. I go into maintenance mode, and my root partition is mounted on SCSI disk 1. It's SDA 3, and it's mounted to my root partition, yet it doesn't recognize any of the other partitions on that SCSI device for some reason. I don't know. I'm still looking into it. I tried different kernels and that come with the Slackware CD, but I didn't want to keep bringing it up and down. I mean, everything was working just hunky-dory after the 11 upgrade, and that should do me for a long time because Slackware is still releasing security updates for 9, some versions of 9 and 10, and 10 is pretty darn old, and 11 should be around for a while. 12 just came out, so I'm going to keep looking into it. But I love it. You know, it was so beautiful. 12 has all sorts of new packages in there and different new support for different technology. I think I'm going to have to actually burn that to a disk and throw that up in one of my virtual machines and play around with 12 because it looks really nice.
Yeah, I had played around with 12 a little bit on Parallels here. It is very nice.
Yeah,
if we're going to talk about upgrades, I upgraded my MythBox.
Oh, yeah?
Finally. I did the not myth, the R5 F27 version.
How'd it go?
It is completely painless. I was up and running inside of 30 minutes. I didn't have to do anything. It was three. If you want to play around with not myth, get this version.
Now, this is the upgrade to handle the schedule direct. Changeover, right?
That's the schedule direct stuff, yeah. But it was literally insert disk, answer like 12 questions, and watch TV. Got everything on it. You know, for those who want their TV converted to iPod versions, on it, it'll do it'll convert it to an iPod version for you. It'll do conversions to Xvid for you. Yeah, well, it defaults to Xvid right now. I'm sure, yeah, you can put other things on there. The 770 encode is built in already for it. It's sweet.
Yeah, so Cecil does a great job with that distro.
Yeah, this one, I had picked up the one before that, which I thought was the latest one, you know, because it came out in September on it, but it didn't have the schedule direct stuff on it. So I went through the instructions on how to get the schedule direct stuff on there, and was really painful, and plus I couldn't get TV out to work on it, and suddenly I went back onto the forums, and I saw there was a later version came out. It was the same day I was screwing around with it. So I got that one, burned it on, like I said, just did the whole thing from scratch on it, 30 minutes tops on it. TV out works perfectly on it. It's just perfect.
Yeah, I upgraded my Myth installs based on Ubuntu and OpenBox desktop, and my upgrade took about, I don't know, 10 minutes to get the newest versions and just go in and do the switchover for Schedules Direct. They dropped the price of that, by the way. Initially, they were doing $5 a month for 3 months or $15, and they cut that in half. Now it's
6 months now.
Right, and anybody who signed up was automatically extended. So as soon as they hit their threshold, that should go down to $20 a year, which hopefully they hit sooner than later.
Yeah, I haven't had any problems with it. It seems to get all of the stations I'm looking for.
I've been loving it. I've been playing with the cut lists and doing the exports, archiving the videos using mm-hmm. NumExport. It's great. Good stuff, man.
Other than that,
is that it for this week? I don't have money.
I think so. I'm pretty much done.
All right, what's the song for tonight? Since you're the one who picked it. Who might this be?
Somebody jumping in the last minute?
It's Link.
Hey, lazy boy. Where were you all night?
Oh, I had some family emergency I had to attend to.
Is everything okay?
I hope so. I hope so.
Oh, I hope so, too.
Yeah.
What'd I miss? I missed all the good stuff.
Just Greg and Drew about the Ohio Linux Fest. It was really good stuff.
Alan's going to do some breakdancing at the after party.
All right.
Damn. So how you doing?
Hanging in there, guys. How about yourself?
All right. All right. Doing good.
We're here.
Doing
Everybody's
well.
Just excited for Ohio Linux Fest now?
No, yep. It's gonna be a good time. The excitement kind of burned out about 10 minutes ago. Yeah. Hey, you know what? What time are you guys flying? Are you supposed to get into Columbus?
Early in the morning.
Okay.
Let me look at this schedule real quick, and I'll tell you.
So I think I'm getting in an hour before you, so I might as well just hang around the airport.
We'll do brunch.
I'll hang around the airport.
Sounding.
It says, arrive at 8:45 a.m. Columbus, Ohio.
We're not going to be able to check into the hotel rooms until later in the day. I'm assuming in the afternoon, right?
Right. Well, we're going to get there at 8:45. And you figure, you know, it's, what, half an hour or whatever for you to find your damn luggage if you're lucky enough to have it actually get there with you.
Oh, snap. You guys are going to have to wait for me because I'm not getting in until 9:16.
Right. Well, that's what I mean. By the time that we get there and find our luggage and stuff, then we can start trying to hunt you down. And then by the time you have your luggage, it's like, you know, we're working on 10 o'clock and we can... I figure we can all go somewhere and congregate and have like a, I don't know, maybe a late breakfast or early lunch, brunch kind of thing somewhere and hang out and relax for a little while. And, you know, it won't be long after that that we can check into the motel.
So what we need to do is have Gorkon come and pick us up so we don't have to eat the fee, the cost of a cab.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he drops us off wherever we want to go and then we just tell him to get the hell out. And we never talk to him again. Because that's the way we roll.
Get the hell out, you bastard, you.
That's it.
Sticker stealer.
Well, you know what? We got to make sure he gives us the swag that comes to his place.
Yeah, before.
That's true. That is true.
Before we... Don't let him know about this plan. Shh, keep it quiet. Shh. And nobody out there who's listening, let him know. Just play along.
Nobody, don't ever tell anybody named Gorkon or Joel, and especially not if he looks like a bum hanging out on a set of rocks in front of your motel.
That's right.
Plastic bags.
If you see a homeless guy in Ohio with plastic bags and he smiles and waves at you, just keep walking. Don't give him money. Or a Linux CD.
That was too funny. Remember, we pulled into the parking lot of a motel, and Dan's like, look at this homeless guy. I'm like, Dan, I think that's Gorkon.
I never saw Gorkon because that was the first time I saw him. I was impressed, though, because for a minute there, I thought, wow, the Ohio homeless guys are pretty clean.
Well-groomed and shaved.
Yeah.
Well groomed and shaved, and they have impeccable looking plastic bags.
That's it. Oh. Well, well, well. We're just about to close up here, Link. Do you have anything else you want to add?
Well, actually, I had all kinds of stuff. But at this point in my evening, it has all escaped me, and I'll try and remember it all for next time.
Fantastic.
That's all right. Next week we don't have a guest, so, you know, think of some content.
Okay, yeah. We'll save it for next week. And I hope everything goes well with your family.
Yeah, me too. I have to kick my daughter's ass, but, you know.
Uh-oh. As long as everybody's safe and healthy, that's all that matters.
Yes, it's just the teenage angst.
Kicking in.
Yes.
It's kicking in.
Better you than me right now.
Yours is coming, buddy. You're only a few years behind.
I know.
You're a few years behind, and then after, you know, you're done with yours, then we
you
can both sit back and we can both sit back and laugh at Pat when it's his turn.
I got two boys, man.
That doesn't make any difference, man. They still, you know, male, female, they still are teenagers eventually. And, you know, that's when the entirety of the world comes crashing down, it seems.
Ugh. Is your daughter moody?
Moody. That's a polite way of saying things. Yes. I think moody is a symptom, yeah.
Oh, man. Mine is in that... The hormones, the emotional roller coaster. Ugh.
See, I was thinking more along the, not, you know, not moody. I was thinking more along the lines of Satan, you know.
Mine hasn't gotten that far yet. Well, Pat's
wait.
Pat's not going to get.
Boy, it gets better.
Yeah, Pat's not going to get so much the emotional roller coaster as the constant eating and destruction.
I'm going to be there with him, my friend.
Yeah, he gets... I think that you're right. I think that the boys do more destruction. They both eat, you know what I mean? Like,
yes.
Yeah, even girls eat everything that's not nailed down. It's something about, you know, the furnace that ignites in their teenage years, and they get that hollow leg thing going on. It's just like everything that's not nailed down.
Ay-yi-yi.
Bill didn't blow it up.
Hmm.
Pat, you chose a six-minute
yep,
song.
You get, Pat.
What's that?
You chose a six-minute song.
That's okay. Want me to introduce a song?
Do you have anything else to add, Link?
That's it, man.
All right,
everybody,
well,
be happy and, you know, have a better day than I've had, certainly, when you listen to this. And make sure you pack your shit and get to the Ohio Linux Fest.
See us at Barley's in 8 days.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
buy me a scotch, because I'm probably going to need it.
All right, go ahead and introduce this song there, Pat.
The song is by David Henderson. It's called We Gotta Go. It's a nice bluesy rock song in the vein of, like, maybe Skynyrd or Allman Brothers. Or Allman Brothers.
All right.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. And here it is.
And hello to you too, Alan.
Hello to you
too. All right, well, we'll see y'all next week. Ah, wait, let me plug the audio in.
No,
I didn't start it yet. I didn't start it yet. Here we go. Ah, there we go.
Why doesn't this thing work?
all new faces all around me. How did they turn our dreams to gale? Cause I wanna know. Cause we gotta go.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Mm, yeah, with my tongue brush.
Shut up.
Just shut up. It's over.
It's over, Johnny.